Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I've asked my transition team to develop a list of executive actions we can take on day one to restore our laws and bring back our jobs. It's about time. These include the following. On trade, I am going to issue our notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. Instead, we will negotiate fair bilateral trade deals that bring jobs and industry back onto American shores.
The flight of the Valkyries and a new president. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's a new day that has dawned indeed. In some ways it's not. But we'll have to see how much of this actually can be passed with the rhinos in Congress who actually want TPP, and the Democrats, of course, want it as well because they're in the pocket of China. Now, that's a big story, and I'm not a question, there's no question for it. I'm going to play some of the statements that Mr. Trump has made about his first 100 days in the new video he released. But I think a far bigger story today is that Trump won't pursue charges against Clinton. That's a hot-button issue. Now, I'm on record with this. When it came out about, what, a week ago or Sunday, I said it's a good idea not to pursue charges against Clinton. And many of you agreed, many of you didn't agree. The reason I said no is twofold. It's very pragmatic not to pursue charges against him. And you'll say, but where's the honor in pragmatism? Well, there's honor in running a country without constant strife. That's number one. But, you know, the art of the deal includes compromise. And I've told you from the beginning we're not going to get 100% of what he promised. I said at some point if we got 65, then I lowered it to 50. Now I'm down to a lower number. But it's 1,000% better than we would have had she won, the woman from Chappaqua. So we have to ask you, the audience, to chime in on this. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on emails? Remember, President-elect Donald Trump said during the campaign that he would appoint a special prosecutor to pursue possible charges against Hillary Clinton after he would assume office. Now, you know, the truth is 75% of the American people believe that there are now two stands of justice. You know that. One for the poor, that's the rest of us, the middle class, the poor, and certainly a different one for the rich. Okay? Now, the investigation into Hillary Clinton was bungled from the beginning to the end. Trey Gowdy bungled it. FBI director bungled it, whose name it's terrible. He was in the news because he undermined. He was the reason Hillary lost, to be honest with you. The last two bombshells, it's what destroyed her campaign was the email scandal. Remember how it excited the nation? So now, so they got what they wanted. He won. She lost. And they figures, what's to be gained? Why drag the country through this again? There are bigger things to do. I mean, you could stay positive and, you know, the secret of success in all people I've known is try to stay positive. We can carry around vendettas against people who have harmed us, hurt us, slighted us. And you know what that does? It ruins your life. I have plenty of people I don't like. I have plenty of people who have stood in my way. I have plenty of people who have insulted me. You can't remember them every second. If you want to go forward, you have to go forward. And to go forward, you can't look backwards. It's that simple. So I think it's a good thing not to pursue charges against Clinton. That's topic number one. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? That's number one. But there are many, many other topics that are very, very important today, including one that I think you should chime in on. Listen to clip number five where John McShane says something about how to treat captured enemy combatants in clip five.
There's no judge in America that wouldn't say they're in violation of the law because it's specifically in law now prohibited. So I don't give a damn what the President of the United States wants to do or anybody else wants to do. We will not waterboard. We will not torture. If you inflict enough pain on somebody long enough, they're going to tell you whatever they think you want to hear.
Is he wrong? Now, the emotional instinct on this is to say, yes, put the Islamofascists on an ironing board for all I care. get a hair iron and put it on their eyes. Many of you don't care. Many of you would do anything to them to stop a bomb from going off in your daughter's schoolyard or in a mall, right? However, McCain is saying, I don't care what the president says, we will not waterboard, while Donald Trump says he will waterboard. So I think we need to discuss it. That's a big topic. Should waterboarding continue to be banned? Remember, we are not immune to like behavior committed against our troops if they are captured. Now, unfortunately, the Islamofascists, who we have been fighting for too long now because of weakness on the part of our non-leadership, they could have been crushed a long time ago with a vociferous attack. You know that, and I know that. If you could defeat the Nazi army, which had one of the most phenomenal air forces and navies in the world, in less time it has taken for Obama to stare down ISIS, you know, that tells you more about Obama than it does about ISIS, incidentally. But are there standards on the battlefield and off the battlefield that should be upheld no matter what they do? We don't have to prove to them we're better. We know we're better than them. We know that they're subhumans. We know that the things they do to men, women, and children are beyond the human pale. But does that mean we go down to their level? Now, some say that's the only thing they'll understand. An eye for an eye. You know, you're biblical in that regard. You know, if they pluck your eye out, pluck two of their eyes out. Or as George Orwell, one of my heroes, wrote, he was an early-on socialist. He was enamored of it in the early 30s when socialism was very popular amongst the intelligentsia. And then when he saw how the Soviet system, the communists, had taken over the socialist system and turned it into what it is in the Castro Cuba of today, a dictatorship, or what it is today in North Korea, a pure dictatorship, George Orwell ceased to be a socialist, and he revised his opinion of socialism, and he said, if a man comes to put a bomb in your mother's house, put a bomb in his mother's house first. So in other words, he learned that you have to fight fire with fire. So my friends, there are two questions, but that's not it. I'll tell you what else. I'm giving you three or four because it's before the holidays and your mind's already on everything else. So I decided to throw the kitchen sink at you. You ready for more? Here's a couple of more things I'm going to deal with today. I saw a picture today of a muzzled bear in chains at a circus-themed nightclub in France. I got so angry. I wanted to strangle the owner of the club. I wanted to put him in chains. But the problem is the owner of that club probably is in chains after hours, so you'd only be doing him a favor. But they brought this poor bear to the club in Brittany on November 19th. And the animal comes from a traveling Russian circus. And the picture of the poor bear was shared on social media. Thousands of people signed an online petition calling for a ban on animals appearing in nightclubs. I personally think we should go much further than that. Because there are other issues. Did you hear about the world's saddest polar bear who had been kept in a shopping center in China? Did you know about that? This poor little bear, a polar bear, had been kept in a shopping center in China. And they finally put this poor bear out into sunlight. Have you seen pictures of the panda bears who were caged in China? And how they are depressed and hunched over? They look like a human being who is depressed. They've given up all hope. Their hearts are broken. Do you know that? Do you know that animals have feelings? Did you know that? I know many of us eat animals. I get that. That unto itself is a problem that many of us have to struggle with. But we do because we're carnivores. And we go ahead with it anyway. But if you go to a slaughterhouse, you probably become a vegan. Just one trip to a slaughterhouse, you probably never eat a hamburger again. Just look at the eyes of a cow as it's being led to a slaughter. And look at the cow as it looks back upon its fellow cows before it's killed. And hear the cries and the screams in the slaughterhouse. I'm sorry to tell you. So in other words, there you are. But now we're talking about something different. Not the slaughtering of animals. A muzzled bear in a nightclub? Is that normal for you? So I'm going to raise the question to another level. Is it time to close all zoos? That's number three. Number one, is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? Number two, should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used? Number three, is it time to close zoos? But wait, I got a holiday special for you. There's another question. I'm going to give you the kitchen sink today. We are going to see something in the Trump administration that many of you are going to gag on, and that is $1 trillion in infrastructure spending. And you're going to say, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, 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 it's going to blow out the budget, expand the deficit. Well, I want to say, wait a minute, slow down, because there are different types of government spending. Many of us don't understand it, but not all expenditures are equal. If you spend $1 trillion on welfare, by and large, it's money lost. Now, it's true the money goes into the economy to a certain extent, but it doesn't really create anything, if you think about it. A lot of it's sent overseas, number two. That's kind of a negative form of government spending. And by the way, of all the money that Obama ripped off to give his investors, meaning his creditors, meaning his supporters, of all the money he ripped off with all of his programs, which he says there's no scandals, has anyone seen a single building, a single bridge, a single tunnel, a single road built under Obama's infrastructure spending? No, because there was none. Do you know that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a socialist, no question about it, created a new deal called the Works Progress Administration, WPA. It affected my family personally long before I was born, but I didn't know it. My father was poor, had no job, one of the tens of millions of unemployed Americans, a young kid, immigrant. So FDR created a new deal, and those were government jobs. He got a job in, I don't know where, he was a chauffeur for a low-grade assemblyman. I don't know how he got it. He's been dead so long, I can't even ask him, God rest him. But I don't know how he got it. I have no idea. But he told me he was in Saratoga Springs driving a congressman around or something, an assemblyman. As a young kid, he became a chauffeur. How did he get? I don't know. He wasn't a political guy. But he was able to put food on the table as a result of it. And I drive through tunnels here in San Francisco. I see the amazing tile work in tunnels. Or in New York, I see LaGuardia Airport, the Ronald Reagan Washington National Los Angeles airports. I see various bridges. I see the Florida Keys Overseas Highway. I've seen the Bonneville Power Project on the Columbia River. I've been to the Upper Mississippi locks and dams. These were all built by the federal government. And that is infrastructure spending. And that's part of the infrastructure that made America great. Now, Donald Trump is a builder. He's a very, very important builder. And he said he's going to rebuild the infrastructure. We know our bridges and roads are a disaster. We know our airports are worse than third world countries. So what is going to happen is Trump's going to raise money to do these things. And the immediate knee-jerk reaction from the knee-jerkers is going to be, oh, you can't do this. It's new debt and that's bad. You can't build anything with money like that. We don't have any no deficit spending. A government can never, under any situation, do anything right. Privatize it. That's what you're going to hear from the shrill gallery, the peanut gallery. Well, there's two types of spending. If you spend $1 trillion on building all of these things, according to a study by Wilbur Ross, the Trump policies of spending $1 trillion to rebuilding these things would add $2 trillion to the economy. And so, therefore, the $1 trillion he would invest would generate another $1 trillion in ROI. You know what ROI is, return on investment, something Obama never learned in Marxism 101. Alinsky 101 didn't know about return on investment. To him, it was only the marching and the destroying. So he's going to have a tax from the right, a tax from the left, but they're going to create amazing jobs. They're going to put people to work who will pay taxes. They're going to be American citizens. So that's now question number three. Actually, it's four. Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion to rebuild America's infrastructure? You now have four questions. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? Should waterboarding of Islamofascists be stopped or used? Should zoos be closed? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? If these are not enough for you, my friends, you're beyond hope. I'll be here to take your calls on these and other topics right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to Michael Savage. Coming up tomorrow morning from 5 to 9, it's the KSFO Morning Show on Talk Radio 560 KSFO.
It is a big show. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? Should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? Should zoos be closed? It's four questions. KLIF. Dallas, Leo, go ahead, please. Fire away.
Dr. Savage, the only reason I voted for Trump was to get Hillary to show the nation that no one's above the law. That's just the way I feel.
Well, I took your call because I don't think you're alone. And that is why this is a controversial decision. If it was not a controversial decision, it would not be a news article, nor would we be discussing it. So it is certainly a controversial decision. However, I am on record saying I understand where he's coming from. Because you know and I know, if he opens this one up again, it's going to further divide the nation, and I don't think we can afford that. On the other hand, what are we going to get out of that? Are they agreeing to put down their swords and their guns? Are they agreeing not to burn and kill and maim? Are they agreeing not to march in every street in America beating up police and attacking private citizens who own businesses? Are they agreeing to cease and desist? No. So we're not getting anything out of that. I want Hillary Clinton to get up there and tell them to stop. See, now that would be the trade-off. If Donald Trump says, I'm not going to pursue charges against you, Hillary, but I need you to get up there and tell these street animals to stop it, that would be a trade-off. But we haven't heard that from her. Instead, we've heard Obama encourage them to go out on the riots, haven't we?
Yes, Dr. Savage. I was about to say that. I hear Obama, he's snickering. He loves it. I don't know why he likes it so much. He's tearing us apart.
But he's snickering. He's a snide guy. This guy has never been punished for anything he's ever done in his life. Ever. He's gotten away with everything he's ever done. The grease was put on the skids for Obama a long time ago, and he's never slipped on appeal. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere. Obama. I didn't hear any hate in this man's heart. See, this is what I'm talking about. Look at the low-life weasels who are at the American Music Awards. I spent a whole day yesterday talking about Plato's view of musicians. He wasn't talking about musicians who were positive, or artists who were positive, or artists who changed people's lives for the better. Okay? He was talking about the degenerates that we saw at the American Music Awards. That's what he was talking about. Go sue Plato for being a racist, see if I care. Maybe you can dig him up from a tomb somewhere. You know, I'm very lucky I found out something today that I didn't know about. I have the best team in radio, I think, in the history of radio. I just found out this morning, Robert Borowski is on the board. How many years, Robert? 15 years in radio. And he's only 18 years old. I don't know how he did it. Clint, who's filling in now on the call screening, is what, 20 years in radio? Very few people like radio anymore. They all think they want to be in Google or this Dougal, Schmoogle, Bamboozle. It's a very unusual business, radio. And it's also a business that either attracts you and you're completely involved in it, or you shouldn't be in it. I've got people who love radio, by the way. Doug up there in Oregon, he's been in it before Marconi, I think. Doug and Marconi were born at the same. These guys are really dedicated to it. I'm feeling good because it's before Thanksgiving. It's always a good time in everyone's life. You always feel good, right? If you don't, you know what? I can't help you. There's nothing positive. Don't call me with depression today. I'm not sending you money, and I'm not going to help you. I just don't have it to give anybody. I can't help anybody today. You know, God helps those who help themselves. Try to be happy. Try to be happy. God loves you, right? Sure. Sure. I watch movies from World War One, documentaries. I see all the proud English boys marching off to war. Chest held, head high, chest out, marching, muscular. Millions of them butchered. Frenchmen, same. Strong, powerful Bretons marching to the battlefield. It didn't matter whether they were strong or weak. Cowardly or heroic, it didn't matter whether they were in perfect health or had consumption, they were butchered on the battlefields. The same with the Germans, butchered on the battlefields. The same with the Russians, butchered on the battlefields. The same with the Serbs, butchered on the battlefields. Yeah, God loved all of them, right? So, you know, there's no answer to it all. At a certain point, there's no answer. You have to have a personal faith and pray for the best. But when you start to see things globally, it's hard to believe in anything except survival. To be fair, I told you that before. At the end of the day, and I'm going to get back to all my questions because it ties into waterboarding. It ties into giving Hillary Clinton the pass. It ties into should poor animals in zoos be released. It ties into infrastructure spending of $1 trillion. Me, it's all about survival. I found that a long time ago in my own life, I've tried everything. I've tried prayer. I've tried meditation. I've tried fasting. I've tried travels to the most obscure places on earth looking for the answer. And at the end of the day, I found out it's all about survival. I still have a childish faith in God because I have no choice in the matter. A pure egoist believes that he himself exists by himself and that no one existed before him. A pure egoist can say, I don't believe in God. Well, who do you believe in? Come back to me when you're screaming with bowel cancer and tell me who you believe in. I'm not trying to wish this on anybody, but you know the old adage, there are no atheists in a foxhole. I don't think there are too many atheists in cancer wards either, incidentally. Or if you're really cynical, go visit a cancer ward for children if you got nothing to do with your time. And then come back and tell me you don't believe in anything. Take a look at the suffering children and their emaciated bodies and the lack of the hair and this and that. So, you know, you got to ask yourself a lot of questions and where your priorities are at. And you got to give your compassion where you can, and you got to preserve your compassion for who you should preserve it for. So it goes all the way back to the first question. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? Should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used or stop? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? Should zoos be closed? I mean, I love this show. The board is so jammed up, we could do this for 7 hours. Now, before I take your calls, I want you to clip 3 from Donald Trump, not 2, Robert, please, number 3, go right to 3.
On national security, I will ask the Department of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other form of attacks. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker.
I would look into the abuse of the welfare system. I'd look into the abuse of the food stamp system. I was in a restaurant last night where I learned a lot of things. And there was a chef, a terrific guy, he's Mexican. And he's a big, big strap. There's different, you know, people in every walk of life. You say Mexican, you have an image. But, you know, I have to tell you, everyone, not all Mexicans are alike. I mean, that's an obvious statement, okay? But Americans, I mean, you say Mexican, you say Irish, when you say Jew, you say this. Everyone has an image. He was a strapping type. Wonderful, friendly man. I've only eaten there 3 times. He comes over to the table and sits down and we're talking. He says he works 7 days a week. And he said to me that he loves America. He bought his first property a few years ago. And he's trying to save for another one. He's got a little child and this and that. And he says, you know, I have a neighbor where I live who's a Muslim. He has 2 brand new cars. They go on vacations. And he said, they're on welfare. He said, it really eats me alive. He said, how do they do this? How does the system let them get away with it? Well, it's not to single out Muslims, but you and I both know that everyone's afraid to say one word about Muslims today for fear they'll be called a racist. So now you have an answer, which I predicted months ago, as to why Hispanics would be voting in droves for Mr. Trump. I told you before anyone else in the media saw it, because I'm a clairvoyant when it comes to reading the tea leaves of the political landscape, I told you that he was going to trend much higher with Hispanics, and I gave you the reasons. And this must have been last April, March or April. I don't remember the date. I said, no. He's going to do much better with Hispanics than Mittens Romney did for 2 reasons. One, Hispanic men are macho, and they don't like taking orders from women. That's number one. And I said, number two, the Hispanics I met are all hardworking, and they all want the American dream. They want to be like Donald Trump. They know they can't be as rich as him, but they know they can have a taste of the American way, the American life that they've come here for. So they do. They put their money into property. They work hard. They're family men. They take their little girl to church on Sunday. I've seen it. So I knew they'd vote for Trump. He's not alone in that. Many Hispanics voted for Trump. But the rats in the media don't want you to know it. They let it leak out a little bit, but they're not telling you what really happened. But again, it goes back to the questions I ask to keep the show on track. And I don't want to repeat myself during every break. I mean, I tend to do that because it keeps the show going. But what do you think about these topics I have raised with you? KKOH in Reno. Tom, line 9. Go ahead. What's the topic? What's the position?
Well, I think I can touch all of the topics. Be kind to animals. Zoos may have been started as some sort of misguided Noah's Ark thing. Waterboard Obama on live TV during the inauguration and then send him to Guantanamo. Throw the book at Hillary. Trump is with her. We have been bamboozled. We are fools. This is, crime does pay. Our state senator, Leland Yee, is in prison in Dallas for accepting $10,000 in bribes. And she walks and keeps doing it. And,
your senator in Dallas, your state senator?
California State Senator Leland Yee, former...
Oh, yeah, I thought because you mixed me up because you're calling me from KKOH in Reno. Leland Yee is in prison for what? Having accepted some bribes.
$10,000. And she wouldn't let you take a picture with her for $10,000. And she's going to walk right through this. And it doesn't appease anybody. The Democrats are not going to give Trump credit for anything. He should throw the book at her and set an example.
All right. Well, see, but you're looking. See, here's the problem. First of all, I'm not arguing with you emotionally nor rationally. However, strategically, I disagree with you on her. Do you remember what I said the day? Let me go back, and I thank. No, hold on. I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me. Great book for the holidays. Read it with your dog. Read it with your panda bear. Read it with your daughter, whatever. I got to go back to the night of the election. I threw a big party for 35 people at a club in San Francisco that I recently joined. And we watched the TV. I left at 8:30. I was tired. I got home. I sat and watched till 11:30. It still wasn't over. It was neck and neck, neck and neck, neck and neck. And then I went to sleep right after the weird guy that works for her, who I hope we never, ever see again. I don't remember his name. The one who had like the hawky face and fingernails. Podesta. I didn't even give him a name. The name itself has become a noun for Podesta. There's nothing you can add to that. If you say he's a Podesta unto itself, that now says it all. The guy was strange, but he gave a speech that said, it's not over yet. Please go home, he said to his followers, the Democrats. We're going to try to count every vote tonight. What happened then? Tell me what happened then. Within a very short period of time, was it not? Hillary Clinton gave a concession speech. What do you think occurred, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Jury, between the time the strange Podesta said, we do not concede, we're going to count every vote tonight, and Hillary Clinton's concession speech? What happened? A deal was worked out. Look, I'm a part-time writer. You know, I've only written a few books in my life, the last number on New York Times bestseller list, one after the other. But I do write fiction from time to time, and in my fictional story, what happened was this. They worked a deal out. The Trump campaign and Hillary sat down, and they worked a deal out that if she concedes and doesn't fight him, he will not pursue charges against her. That's called politics. I know we the people don't like it. We voted for Trump because we thought he was not a politician. But we found out he is a politician. We found it out along the way, and we found it out most particularly when he appointed Renzo Priebus from the RNC as chief of staff. I took a big chance, and I knew I was gambling on it when I did it. I wrote an article, and the article was put on the Drudge Report for 18 straight hours. It got millions and millions of hits around the world. And I know that I alienated everyone in the Trump campaign. In fact, I discussed whether to publish that article or not. And people said to me, do you realize what's going to happen if you criticize anything that Donald Trump does? I said, yes, I do know. But I have an obligation to my listeners first and my readers rather than to my own desires in life for anything. Because without my supporters, I have nothing. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I just said? I don't think people just got that. I knew what I was doing when I criticized Trump's appointment of Renzo Priebus. I knew what chance I was taking. I knew that they would never, ever forgive me. I knew that the umbrella would never be unfurled for the inauguration. I'm telling you like it is. That umbrella, which I had on the, how many times Donald was on this show? And at the end, I would always end with a funny little line like, well, I got that umbrella waiting. He knew what I was saying. He was that quick. He said, well, you keep it ready, Michael. You're going to need it in February. Well, I don't know which February he's talking about, but I haven't heard anyone tell me I'm going to need it for this February. But nevertheless, it'll go into my archives, and maybe I'll auction it off for a valuable cause one of these days, like releasing some of our soldiers who are rotting in prisons in America for having done their job in Afghanistan or in Iraq a little too well for George Bush and for Barack Obama. How many Marines and soldiers are rotting in military prisons around this nation of ours for having had the guts to stand up and kill an Islamo-fascist before he himself got killed? They're rotting away. Maybe I'll donate, you know, the money I raised from the inauguration umbrella that was never used for their defense. But that's it. That's it. There's nothing you can do. You make decisions and you have to live with them. And I'm living with it. And what do I win by that? I'm just making it about me for a minute. By retaining my independence, by retaining my willingness to still support him, but send cautionary messages out to you and to his own campaign about what's coming if they continue to compromise us, I am retaining my integrity. I'm retaining what you listen for. I'm retaining the reason he got elected. Now, make no mistake about it. Many of you say, Savage, you should have been press secretary. Savage, you should have been hired to run the NSF or the NIH. First of all, I don't want any job. I got to tell you right now, I'm not taking a cut in pay. I'm not a bureaucrat. I won't live in Washington. All of those things are very real. I'm an old-style kind of guy. I don't like leaving the privacy of my own life. I just don't. I don't like dressing in suits and ties. I will do it, but not too often. I'm very content with what I do for a living. But what I do for a living is all about you, the audience, listening to this show right now, whether it be in speakers, in your ears, or on a radio somewhere. And all I have, one thing only. You know what that is? My integrity. I hope you appreciate what I'm saying to you. And now we'll go back to these questions. And they're good questions. How do you feel about Trump not pursuing charges against Clinton? Should zoos be closed? Should waterboarding of Islamo-fascists be used? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion? I'll be back. Look, the fact of the matter is, the battle for blue-collar America, so-called, the forgotten man is back again. That's who elected Donald Trump. And I would have to be a fool not to tell you I had nothing to do with his election. I had a little something to do with it. He was on the show since 2011. It was a tough battle. He won by a hair, a horse's hair. So I'm one of several, perhaps the most important person who got him over the finish line. And I don't want anything from it. I don't need anything from it. All I want is you, the audience, to understand I'm here for you. And in your struggle as the forgotten man and the forgotten woman, I remember what it's all about, Eddie and Edith. I don't want you forgotten. I don't want you cast on the roadside again because they used you and stepped over you. I'm sorry. And if it costs me the umbrella, so it does.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I am sick and tired of the negative, dark, divisive, dangerous vision and behavior of people who support Donald Trump. It is time for us to say no. We are not going backwards. We're going forward into a brighter future.
Nobody does radio like this anymore. I got to tell you, I would listen to this show if I was retired. Welcome to the show. I'm reflecting on how lucky we are. I mean, we're already complaining about
him granting her a pardon, and that he appointed Lorenzo Priebus, right? Blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, have we forgotten what it would have been like with that shrill voice around the clock? Not to mention that awful sorority of psychopaths who surround her? Did you want to see Andrew, whatever, is that Anthony? Anthony's, I can't use the word, I'm not a rap star, but let's say Anthony's, I can't use the B word, Anthony's girl, Anthony's wife, you want to see her again? With the Starbucks in the hand? They're all gone. All those mean-faced, clipped-haired monsters, they're gone. They're going to all go back to the universities and destroy the men in the university instead of the Eddies in America. They'll take it out on your son instead in the colleges. So you got to thank your lucky stars, you know. That's all. So I got the questions again. Is it a good idea to give Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal? Should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used or not used? Should zoos be closed? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion, which might produce $2 trillion in benefits to America in terms of jobs, etc., according to real economists as opposed to professional politicians who have no idea that some things... Well, there's an old adage. I didn't know this. When I was a youngster, I wasn't from a family that had any money, so we didn't know anything about money. We didn't understand money. All I knew, my father went to work. He bought something for X, and he sold it for Y, and that was the profit. And if at the end of the year, the rent and the this and the that was taken off and there was a profit, then the family could pay the house off and I could, you know, work, whatever. That's all we did. There was not even, he never invested. I didn't even understand what the word meant. Investment was for white people. That's a joke, by the way. They were for different people. They invested. We didn't know about investing. We know nothing. They didn't even own a stock. Nothing. It was from another universe. No stocks, no bonds. In that sense, we're very, very unsophisticated. So I maintained that for most of my life. I didn't understand money. And then at a certain point in my 20s, I don't know exactly when, who knows, I started to rub shoulders in a different society from a friend of mine who, I told you about the kid, he's a great guy. I haven't seen him in 40 years. I don't know where he is. But the father was the one who owned a bar on the Upper West Side, which is very unusual for the men in the family groups that I came from, who were all hardworking tradesmen, small businessmen, mainly tradesmen. They worked in the needle trades or this or that. They're small jobs. They maintain their family. The wives stayed home and work. But this guy owned a bar on the Upper West Side. He was a tough kid. He was a boxer, a fighter, tough as nails, didn't look like anyone else, taller, broader, bigger hands, blue eyes, strong as can be, street fighter. But his son was a tough kid, too, like the father. So the father sent him to the New York Military Academy, where Mr. Trump went, by the way. I'm not saying they knew each other. They didn't. But through that association, I met kids whose fathers had a lot of money or more money. And they talked about things, even in between talking about women and having fun, which is all we really did. I would hear that would drift over, like investments and this. I didn't even know what it was. And one of them once said, and never to this day, I remember, it's coming back to me. I can't give the details, but he was a very rich kid from Great Neck, New York. His father was a major league builder. I don't know how we were all involved in something with an island. I don't remember what. I got dragged along into it. I was like, you know, to me, it was a dream. And he once said to me, because I complained about investing some of my own money in something, and he snapped at me, this rich kid. He said, if you want to make money, you got to spend money. I had never heard that before. See, I came from a background where you didn't spend money to make money. It made no sense to me. I thought if you spent money, you lost it, right? Like you bought shoes. That's spent money. And all you had was the shoe. I didn't understand you invested the money. So, you know, it took me years to absorb that. If you want to spend money, if you want to make money, you got to spend money. And then I started to use that and incorporate it in my life. It was like a miracle, like a genius idea. Now, Obama, on the other hand, I'm going to give you an example of Obama and the Democrats. They're like me as a young kid. They don't understand the first rules of capitalism. They think that when you want to do something, you take it from somebody. You appropriate it through taxes, regulations, permits, and then you spend it on building up a base of voters by buying their votes. They don't invest in anything. Obama's not built one bridge, one road, one building, one dam, nothing of the trillions of dollars this bum has appropriated in order to bring in illegal aliens, in order to buy votes. I haven't seen a bridge, a tunnel, nothing built by him. Because he is still like that, you know, that kid that I was, who doesn't understand the first rules of the nation he lives in. Now, that's a long way of explaining to you that if you spend $1 trillion on infrastructure and you can make $2 trillion overall, that's an investment. So it's not all lost money. Now, it's true Obama took $1 trillion in the beginning. What was it called? There was something was called, Robert. Do you remember? They got a fancy name for it. I don't remember it. They're all shaking their heads, but no one remembers. We don't remember. It was like a program he came up with, right? But nothing was built with the money. Where did it go? Where did it go? Where did it go? Take a look at Manhattan real estate. Take a look at L.A. real estate. Take a look at Florida real estate, and you'll know where the Democrats put their money. That's where it went, into their own pockets. They didn't build anything with it. They invested for themselves as they screwed the public and took the money for themselves. They didn't build anything with the money. He didn't create any jobs with it. Okay, so now we're moving on to Trump, who wants to rebuild America. He's right. Remember during the campaign he said, you go to a third world country, like, let's pick any one of them, China. He was amazed how new the airports were, how clean the roads were. I remember years ago I would go to Malaysia, the roads were better than in San Francisco. San Francisco has an infrastructure from another universe, like a fourth world. I invite you to drive from San Francisco north over the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't care where you're from, you either live here or you don't. And I want you to pay attention to one section of that roadway. They built a tunnel. I don't know what that cost. They widened the road and built a tunnel. A beautiful job. Beautiful job. Probably the same people have been building roads and bridges going back to Roman times, got the contracts for obvious reasons. Because in those days, all roads lead to Rome. In this days, all roads still lead to Rome. But nevertheless, they can still build, those people. So they built a beautiful tunnel with the federal money, state money, whatever it was to build. Now you get off that piece of road and you go to the piece just before the Golden Gate Bridge. Broken. You could damage a rim. You could damage a rim getting on that bridge. Broken. Potholes going onto the Golden Gate Bridge, an iconic structure. Why? Because the thieves who run San Francisco have stolen every nickel of federal, state, and local money for themselves. They haven't invested a dime in the infrastructure. So now enter the federal government. Donald Trump wants to come in and build. That would be his New Deal. His New Deal would be, I would think, a public works project of this type for the greater benefit of America, but specifically for the forgotten man and forgotten woman, the blue-collar American, so to speak. He is a builder. He is a visionary builder who likes to see things built. Remember what I called Obama in Scorched Earth or Government Zero, Obama the Destroyer? Obama lives to see things destroyed. He destroyed our faith in America. I could go do the litany. I'm very good at it. I could give you the iambic right down the line. Obama was a destroyer. He still is. He only knows how to destroy things. The border, the language, the culture. Okay, you get the picture? Okay, so how do you pay for this infrastructure, Eddie? Well, first of all, it's a matter of accountancy. That's number one. But number two, you have to understand that ROI is an important thing. ROI, return on investment. There is a great article about this on Breitbart by a man named Virgil. I don't know whose synonym, acronym that is, but whatever. You need an ROI. What does that mean? Well, it's the opposite of just spending money that goes nowhere. It produces benefits. And as a Trump economic advisor Wilbert Ross told Bloomberg News, Trump policies could add more than $2 trillion to the economy. Okay, that means that his proposed infrastructure expenditures would be $1 trillion invested, which would generate another trillion in ROI. Now, you know and I know that Republicans, mainstream thinkers, who are not really deep thinkers, who are just superficial sand flies, will oppose any such spending. They will say that government can never at any time do anything right. Privatize it. Let them build the bridge private. Let privatize it. Yeah, okay. Right. Well, really, how about the Panama Canal or the interstate highways or the internet? Who built that? Oh, the government built it. They did a pretty good job on it. Okay. So the fact of the matter is, these would produce great jobs. People would go to work. They'll be paying taxes. They'll go on vacations. They'll buy new cars. They'll buy new houses. They'll buy new furniture. But the conservatives and the libertarians will argue that any new debt is bad debt. That's knee-jerk hostility to anything the government does. And that's an odd thing, because it's not 100% true. If you look back, and I'm going to do this for you, I have so many things I need to do at once. I'm going to give you the public work projects that were created during the Great Depression with public money. You know that at that time, unemployment approached 25%. The nation was destroyed. Men were in the streets on bread lines. They were selling pencils. I knew guys whose uncles were selling pencils in New York on 42nd Street. They were out in the street selling pencils. They had nothing. So along came the great socialist president, FDR, and he decided to do what Stalin did, what Hitler did for that matter. By the way, the 30s were a time of great public spending on huge projects. Hitler built the Autobahn. How do you think Hitler, by the way, saved Germany economically? Do you know how he did it? Through great public works projects. And as Stalin did the same thing, the whole city of Stalingrad was built in the 30s. And these created jobs. And FDR did the same thing here by building things. George Washington Bridge, Triborough Bridge, Washington Airport, LaGuardia Airport, Upper Mississippi Locks and Dams, the Bonneville Power Project on the Columbia River, the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge in New York, the Florida Keys Overseas Highway were built in those times. 78,000 bridges under FDR's Public Works Administration and WPA, public and private money together, proposals from states and cities, millions of men and women were put back to work. Rosie the Riveter, for example, was the woman version working in the factories, the shipyards, riveting the ships. Did you know that? As we were gearing up for war with the Nazis and the Japanese. But during that time, 78,000 bridges were built, 650,000 miles of roads, 700 miles of airport runways, 13,000 playgrounds. I played in some of them myself as a kid. I didn't know who built them. 125,000 military and civilian buildings, 40,000 schools, which are still standing. Obama's built Jack, John. I'll be back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
For you.
One of the greats, Fat Domino, Fats Domino, Fats. Lynn F. on Lynn on WABC line 7. What's your position on what?
Okay, Dr. Savage, for the last 2 years I've listened to you, but I've learned so much, and it's because of you I got into politics. Here's my four answers. First thing is, we do need infrastructure. Second thing is, let the animals out of the zoo. Third thing is, I believe in waterboarding. My father was part of the death march in Bataan, and I see the atrocities, and it's time we did something. And as far as Hillary, send it to jail. Just like those other people, the poorer the people have been in jail for less than what she did. As you could
Yes, now listen, I want to be very clear on my position. I said to you I understand why Trump has pardoned her. I didn't say I think it's a good idea. In fact, I think it's going to have terrible ramifications for people who've committed lesser crimes who are either in prison or went to prison for them. Okay? But from the point of view of a nation that's broken, I don't know that we can withstand the Hillary trial right now. Lynn, I'm sending you Teddy and Me. I'm sending you a book of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human for the Holidays. And the pictures are great. I still look good. It was only last year. Look how good I looked. Look what happened in 1 year. 2016, Utopia Productions, Inc., that's my company, Hachette published it, along with Scorched Earth. Teddy still looks the same. Me, I'm sorry, boy, time and gravity. It's been a hard year for me. This was a rough year. How about you? It took a lot out of us, this election. Make no mistake about it, it aged us. Like my publisher wants to come out and take a new picture of me for the next book. I said, I can't do it anymore. You got authors out there. You ever see the pictures of them? They're like 97, and there's a picture of them as a smiling young man. And then you actually see them, and you want to vomit. You can't believe that that's them, but you keep buying their books. Why do they want new pictures of me every year? I said, I look good. Can we top it off at 2016 and, like, take something from 2016 and use it on the next book? I still look good. But after this election, after the what I've been through, we went, let's see, we had the book came out. That was a heavy, heavy, heavy 6 weeks of promotion of Scorched Earth, and you drove it to the bestsellers. Then the election, we had to climb that hill. Then the great award that I got, believe it or not, there's stress involved in awards, always something, right? By the way, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, which was Obama's boondoggle, was $831 billion. That's almost $1 trillion. Not a single bridge or tunnel, so far as I know. Where did all that money go? Huh? Green scam artists. Solar panels made in China. That's my guess. See what I'm saying? So don't think $1 trillion is not a lot of money. It is, but it depends upon how you use it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Mike, I'll teach you for free. Next thing you know, a shiv in the neck. No, no, we don't accept listen to food. We don't accept listen to music lessons. I'm sorry. I still think of taking up the saxophone. I heard it's an easier instrument than the flute. I made the mistake of trying the flute as a young man. My father thought I was, you know what, came home and saw me with the flute. He almost threw me in the street in the snow. If I ever told you what he said to me. You know, he's another world. A man, like, imagine that you raise a son in America, and you're an immigrant father, and then you see him in the basement with a flute. So he figures the whole world was going to come to an end. I was embarrassed. I never picked up the flute again. I was embarrassed. I fell in love with the instrument, and Clint is laughing his head off. Why is he laughing? He comes from tough back. Clint, why is that funny? He thinks it's funny. It is funny. I mean, because you can imagine his little basement in Queens. I'm practicing this flute because I used to go to Latin music in Manhattan. And I became so infatuated with the wooden flute that Jose Fajardo played in a Latin group that I wanted to try to play it. I couldn't do it as the mouth and the structure and the way you looked at yourself in the mirror. It was very weird. It was hard to do. But the father coming down the steps, it was like, just imagine this, what he said to me. Man-child in the promised land, there he was, his worst nightmare. He's in the basement playing a flute wearing all black. That was the end of my music career, I got to tell you. But I looked on it years later, I'm thinking about it. What if I took up the saxophone? That's manly, right? Okay, you know, man plays the saxophone, right? I don't know, because the saxophone is different. It's like it's a wind instrument, but it's not like we on the side of your mouth. The side of your mouth is a little like, you know what I mean? Like air coming out of the front of your mouth is different than this. All right, let's let that go. But lately I've been thinking to take up things I wanted to do as a youngster. Like one of them, I'd like to play the saxophone. Because I hear a piece like that, unbelievable to you. I'd love to play music right now. It was a different world. Dancing, the faces together while you're dancing, sweating each other with their face. That was probably considered illegal somehow. I remember there was a teenage nightclub in Great Neck, New York. I'm just reminiscing before Thanksgiving. This happens to me. I'm slipping from why pardoning Hillary and animals in the zoo should be released, infrastructure spending up to $1 trillion, should waterboarding of Islamofascists be used. But, you know, my mind is already on family and the traveling. I can hear the train in my head. I hear that train coming into the station. I feel that train taking me out of town. I feel it calling. I see the ham sandwiches on white bread. I see the black smoke, but I'm not going on a train. I did as a child. I remember being taken out of school early. I'm already reminiscing. Here we go. Here we go. It should be done Wednesday, but I'm doing it Tuesday. My father would work 7 days a week because he was a breadwinner. My mother would come to get us in school on that Wednesday. Sometimes Tuesday, we got away with an extra day before Thanksgiving. And she'd wait outside. And, you know, teacher would let you out early. And my sister and I were like, oh, so excited. We go down to Penn Station and this and that and the hustle and the bustle. And it was a big thing for a little kid in those days, right? And you get on the train and the hustling. Oh, boy! I can feel it. That's why I still love trains to this day. The wheels and the smoke. You know what that was like to it? Like the mystery of it, like a Godard movie in black and white to a child. And you get on the train, as I've said too many times, and it would be electric train in Manhattan, go under the river, stop in Hoboken, switch to a coal-burning monster, a behemoth that spewed black fumes all the way out into the hills of Pennsylvania where we visited the cousin. Then we get into Pennsylvania in the afternoon, and there'd be so much smoke in that station from all the trains that arrived, you couldn't see anybody. We didn't know we were getting cancer of the eye. Nobody knew anything. People ate the wrong things. They drank the wrong things. They inhaled the wrong things. Everything they did wrong. I think they were happier, though. But nevertheless, couldn't find anybody. Didn't know where they were. And there's a moment of panic where you'd look around the train station and where's the uncle? Where's the aunt? Where's the cousins? And they weren't there. And you thought maybe you'd wind up in the wrong place and there'd be no Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, out of the fog of smoke and confusion, they would appear. Right? Beautiful story. All true. That's why I wrote Train Tracks years ago. That was a beautiful book. A lot of reminiscences in that one. One of these days I'll read it. Maybe over the holidays I'll go back to that and start reading from it. But my mind is now on this world. We just won the election. Very big fight. She's gone from the... she's not going to be, Now, all right, so they're pardoning her. Now, okay. Many of you are very upset that Trump is pardoning her because one of his key promises was he is going to prosecute her. He told you that. Am I right? I told you all I have is my integrity. I told you that I've already paid the price for it. I'm telling you point blank. I'm not going to spell it out because I'm not complaining. I'm on the outside as I was in the last administration. I'm a persona non grata already in the White House. I don't think I'll be sleeping in Al Sharpton's bed in the Lincoln bedroom. Something tells me. But you know what? All I care about is the audience. Because let's say I went to this, I went to that, I had a state. I still have to come back to my audience. I can't BS you one day and do that the next day and come back and have you believe in me. So all I've got is my integrity. All we have in radio is that. I'm trying to maintain it. First of all, what I'm saying to you, I believe it anyway. Now, I told you why he pardoned Hillary. My guess is that it was a deal worked out that she would not contest the election if he would pardon her. So that's what the deal was. But the fact is, many pundits are getting very upset by this. Because how can we say that no one in America is above the law when Hillary Clinton has just been proven to be above the law? She lost the presidency, and she won the popular vote, but everyone knows she's a crook. So, really, so we know she's a crook, but she's not going to be prosecuted? So there's two sets of rules? You know, there's a great article on this by Bland Winship that just came out today. I never heard of the gentleman. He was the lead trial counsel for 26 states in their historic lawsuit challenging Obamacare. But he said, let's go back to 1974, when the peoples of other nations were astonished to behold how intolerant we were of the misdeeds of President Richard Nixon and Vice President Spiro Agnew. Remember, Republicans had just won a landslide re-election 2 years earlier. Agnew was forced to resign because of newly revealed evidence of his prior misdeeds in public office in Maryland. Nixon was thrown out for covering up the infamous burglary of the Democrat Party offices at the Watergate Hotel during the 1972 campaign, and that was a burglary in which Nixon played no known direct role. So that was considered corruption, and oh boy, outrage over this corruption. And they threw him out, Nixon and Agnew. But there's no outrage here? So he's saying, look how far we've descended from where we were before. This coarsening of moral integrity must be laid at the feet of the Clintons, dating back to Bill's perjury and obstruction of justice. And he goes on and on. And he thinks that in order for us to have the blessings of civilization, we need to maintain our moral path to prosperity. See? And he says to wave goodbye to a pardoned Hillary Clinton, as she and Bill head home to live like royalty, while we force our military personnel, including a general, to face prison sentences for a fraction of what Hillary did, he's just the most immoral message we can send. He's not wrong. So don't think that this pardoning of Hillary is going to go over so well. I think that the argument has just begun, frankly, to be frank with you then. To be frankly frank with you, I don't think it's going to go over very well. I think this is going to be a real problem for him. KBOI, Pam, line 6, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I think that we should spend money, a lot of money, on infrastructure. Plus, I think we should also look at improving the electrical grid. I think it's very vulnerable to attack and even EMP. So you might improve it and harden it.
Well, hold on. You know, the Trump said he's going to do that right away. Is that one of the things he's going to do is, I think he just said that. Play clip three again, Robert. This is an interesting one from his first 100 days video. Let's hear 03 for 1 minute while Pam and the others hold on.
On national security, I will ask the Department of Defense and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to develop a comprehensive plan to protect America's vital infrastructure from cyber attacks and all other form of attacks. On immigration, I will direct the Department of Labor...
Stick to the infrastructure, cyber attacks. He has not yet, well, it's not early yet, but in Scorched Earth, I have a whole chapter on cybersecurity, and I've insisted that the United States forcibly recruit workers from Microsoft, from Google, and from Facebook, and force these pirates who run these companies, who are worth hundreds of billions of dollars collectively, who do not pay their fair share of taxes, take away their a goodly portion of their workers, who are the best at this, at hacking into the enemy's websites and doing what we need to do, and let the, instead of making them, you know, accept military pay for forcing them to work for the government, for let's say 6 months to a year at a time, let these companies pay them at their full corporate salaries. What is wrong with that idea? A government has tremendous power. A government can do almost anything it wants, and I believe that's long overdue. It's time for these cyber pirates, I should say these Silicon Valley pirates, to pay their fair share and to contribute to the national security, which they've not done at all. In fact, you can argue they've aided and abetted the enemy for profit. They refused to use their power to stop the Islamofascists from communicating with each other and from planning attacks on this country. They could have done that, but they wouldn't do it because they want unlimited profits. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are going to happen, and I'm terrified of him. And speaking of that, here's this guy, Jeff Bozo. Jeff Bozo runs the Washington Post. Jeff Bozo bought the Washington Post specifically to attack Donald Trump and to elect Hillary Clinton. Well, now that Hillary lost, he's spending every day in the Washington Post attacking Donald Trump. Why do you think he is doing that? Well, it's not so much that he hates Donald Trump. It's that his business interests are such that they're a monopoly. Many people think that Amazon is a monopoly, and they want the government to break up monopolies. I myself have suggested so in my writings, that companies like Facebook are clearly monopolies. Amazon is a monopoly. What competition is there? And at a certain point, competition, when it's crushed out, is not American at all. That's absolutely not what America is built upon. That is why Standard Oil was broken up in the early 1900s, because it became too large. You get bought out or crushed all opponents. So there was only one company, one oil company in the whole country. So Rockefeller was at that point stronger than the country, bigger than the country. But he was taken on by interests who were populists who broke him up. Of course, he was smarter than they were. Although they broke up his Standard Oil, he was very smart. His lawyers were better than the government lawyers. And what they did was they created hundreds of little Standard Oils. So it was Standard Oil of New York, Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of Pennsylvania, Standard Oil of Delaware, Standard Oil of Kentucky. You got the picture? You know, so he outsmarted the government. But nevertheless, you know, it did break up that monopoly for a little period of time. So it'll be like, you know, Microsoft of New York, that kind of thing. They'll still try to do it, but they can get around the company trying to get around them if they see what the Rockefeller did. But no one's asking me to head up the antitrust division of the Justice Department, nor do I know enough about the law to head up the antitrust division, but it would be a job to salivate over for someone who really believes in competition, I got to tell you. And by the way, I have a candidate for it who's a Democrat. I know the best antitrust lawyer in the world who happens to be a tremendous supporter of Hillary Clinton. He lives in San Francisco. I can't mention his name. He probably wouldn't be happy with it. But I met him at the Columbus Day Parade outside the Pinocchio restaurant. We all drank a lot of wine together. Strangely enough, we have the same beards now. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Obama is not a typical American president. We can use every word you want in the book, but American is not an apt description of this man who has disrespected the working man, the working woman, spit on the Eddies, spit on the Ediths. That's why they lost the election. But don't think he has stopped. Oh, no. What he's done in the last week, you'll never believe. 20 new regulations that'll cost the economy $5 billion. The Interior Department finalized regulations to cut methane emissions from oil and natural gas operations on federal lands. What do you think he's doing that for? That's to cripple drilling and fracking. On Wednesday, the EPA published the Renewables Enhancement and Support Growth Rule. What does that mean? That's a boondoggle for the friends of his in the biofuel racket. On Friday, the Interior Department, under this gangster regime, banned offshore drilling in the Arctic. Sounds good, doesn't it? Cripples America even further. These are midnight regulations. They can be overturned by Mr. Trump and a Republican-controlled Congress, but it could take months, if not years, okay? So he's still doing it. Now, compare that with actual infrastructure spending that builds bridges and roads and tunnels and airports, playgrounds, school buildings, and you'll see the difference between what Obama's thinking is and that of a true American president. And if you want to understand the difference between Obama and even a bigger liberal than you can imagine, FDR, take a look at the bridges and tunnels you're driving on, because a lot of them were built by FDR with the Public Works Administration and WPA programs. Okay? More to talk about when I come back right here on the Savage Nation. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Well, Mr. Trump is a builder, and he built a castle in the sky for all of us, and we all imagined we were going to go into it with him. And now, of course, that the hot air has been let out of the balloon, we're all down to earth together, and it's not exactly the castle in the sky that we thought it was going to be up there. So, you know, what are you going to do about it? He's the president. Well, what you're going to do is you're going to remain very respectful, and you're going to retain your vigilance, and you're going to say, wait a minute. Okay, we got to do what we got to do. And now we see that he's going to pardon Hillary, which I understand, but I don't agree with. I think it's politically a smart move to pardon Hillary. I think a deal was made with her to avoid a contentious battle over the election, number one. And I don't think America could take such a trial, number two. But it doesn't mean it's right. It's probably very bad. Terrible precedent for people in the military and intelligence services who will be prosecuted anyway for things like this. Let alone the average kid out there who now knows he can cheat and get away with it. But now, today, something else happened. Trump went to visit the vermin at the New York Times. Made a personal visit to the NYT. Now, the NYT happens to be the newspaper that attacked him viciously daily. Perhaps worse, in a way, than the Daily News. The Daily News was the worst in America. So he goes to the New York Times. Again, we ask why. Well, he's trying to make them like him more. And then he is asked at the meeting with the vermin at the New York Times the following question. They ask him about the alt-right conference in Washington, D.C. over the weekend led by Richard Spencer that celebrated the election of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said, I condemn them, I disavow, and I condemn. So then he was attacked by the New York Times guys who said that he energized the alt-right. He says, I don't want to energize the group, and I disavow the group. It's not a group I want to energize. And if they energize, I want to look into it and find out why. That's during a personal visit to the New York Times. where reporters were live-tweeting his remarks. And then they asked him about Steve Bannon. And they want to know, is he a member of the alt-right? Trump says, I've known Steve Bannon for a long time. If I thought he was a racist or alt-right, I wouldn't even think about hiring him, he said. All right, so there you go. Breitbart's not a member of the alt-right. They're a member of the, what, alt-left? All aboard? What are they? What is Breitbart? It's a great site. I mean, I go on it every day. I wouldn't have called them alt-right or this right. I don't like to categorize what they are. I don't think they're a consistent anything. But we know the smear campaign against Steve Bannon was conducted by people who don't even know him. That we know. So there we go. So now the left can categorize me. They can categorize anybody they want, any way they want. But we're not allowed to categorize them. Well, that's the story today. So what's going to happen next? What is going to happen next? What is going to happen next? Well, I've been talking about giving Hillary Clinton a pass on the email scandal. Is it a good idea? I talked about waterboarding because Donald McCain, I almost said. John McCain said, I don't get... Well, listen to what John McCain said in clip 5. I'll repeat it again. We're going to talk about it again in this hour.
There's no judge in America that wouldn't say they're in violation of the law because it's specifically in law now prohibited. So I don't give a damn what the President of the United States wants to do or anybody else wants to do. We will not waterboard. We will not torture. If you inflict enough pain on somebody long enough, they're going to tell you whatever they think you want to hear.
Look, McCain has a very personal relationship to torture. He was tortured by the friendly folks from Vietnam, and they broke his back. Well, actually, his back was broken by my understanding when he parachuted out of the plane. They stabbed him with bayonets. They tortured him repeatedly for years. So he knows what torture is, so obviously he has a strong feeling about it. However, you know, it comes down to 1 minute to midnight. Let's say you capture a terrorist, whatever it may be, an Islamo-terrorist or whoever, and you know through your intelligence network that he has a ticking nuclear device set to go off in a major city somewhere, but you don't know exactly where it is. And you know this guy does know where it is. He was one of the ringleaders. And you have only a small period of time to get the information out of that person. So here's the moral dilemma. Do you torture him using any means necessary to get him to tell you where it is? Or do you use the Robert's Rules of Order and you do it the right way that makes John McCain and all the libs happy in order to maintain your sense of your own justice? It's a choice that you're going to have to make in the coming years and months, and I think that Trump's already made it. He's going to put men in there who are not squeamish, who will use any means necessary to break the will of these people and get the information and save all of us. And I think most of us would support it. And I know it's not a nice thing to perceive, but it's what's going to happen. And that's it, but we're going to talk about it anyway. You know, you can talk about war in the esoteric all you want. It's like talking about a fight in the esoteric. Many of us like to watch fights, and we imagine we're martial artists. Well, none of us are, unless you are. We imagine we're in the ring, and we all have these tactical ideas. It's like watching a football game. We think we have ideas for the football players, but we aren't football players, most of us. They're playing the game, so they're, you know, when you're playing the game, you have to play the game in order to win. Well, it's the same as being in prison. Many of us think we could survive prison and that we're tough enough to handle it, but we're not. We crack within a few days, if that. We'd be nothing but sheep walking to our slaughter in a prison situation, no matter how strong we think we are, because they live by a different set of rules, and they live by a different set of rules that we can't even comprehend. And again, that's the world of reality as opposed to the world of fantasy that most of us live in. And now let's take that issue to the presidency itself. It's one thing to run a campaign. It's quite another thing to rule a nation and rule the world. And I think that that's where the difficulty comes in for most of us who have supported Donald Trump from the beginning. We're not going to be happy with all of his decisions. We're going to have to take what we can get. And I'm going to repeat over and over again what I've said before. If he only delivers on a small percentage of his promises, and I'll give you what they should be. Rebuild the military. Rebuild the Defense Department. Put in a real defense, someone in defense who's a real military person, as opposed to this moronic type of individual from the university who put the transsexual operations ahead of treating our war combat veterans. if he gives us a better military, more morale in the military, if he rebuilds the infrastructure of the military, if he builds that wall with Mexico and deports the illegal aliens in our prisons, if he lowers taxes by a very significant rate for the average person, the middle class, if he eliminates the estate tax, which is the greatest punishment you can imagine put upon working people who save and pay taxes and whatever money they have at the end of their life they want to give to their children, why should a criminal government take 50% of that money at the end of their life when it's already been taxed? If he does those things alone, that would be 10,000% better than what we would have had under her. So now when we see all of these other little things coming along, we can get upset all we want. But the fact of the matter is, running a nation is not the same as running a campaign. And I made my point. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So I will try my best to tread that fine line between what he promised and what he's delivering, and maintaining my integrity of being an outside member of the press or of the media class who may not be happy with the things he's doing. I don't think that we have to attack Donald Trump directly when he disappoints us, but I think that I, of all people, have an obligation to say I respectfully disagree with you, Mr. President. And although they may not be happy with this right now, and I'm sure they're not, I'm sure Kellyanne Conway and Steve Bannon don't like me, I have no way to know that, but I'm pretty sure they don't need me and they don't like me. They figure they got all the power in the world right now. I know something about reality. My guess is that within 3 to 6 months, there'll be a new team in there. Because, yeah, I'm leveling with you the way I see it. I've said this to some friends in high places because they feel the same way. What I've said is he is going to hit stone walls soon like you can't imagine. This is almost a honeymoon period where he actually has no opposition whatsoever. Remember that. There's no opposition. There's no Congress to compete with. Nothing. No courts. No lawsuits. Zero. So right now they're flying high and they think that they have all the power in the world to do whatever they want. And they do. It's a honeymoon period. When you come back to me in March or April when he faces a Congress that's not going to be 100% his, you say, oh, it's all Republican. What does that mean? They oppose most of his real policies. All the policies that we elected Trump to enact are the ones opposed by the Republican Congress. Well, I want you to think about that one. So don't think he's going to have an easy time of it once he tries to put certain things through. And take a guess who he's going to have to go back to at that point. You can pretty much figure out it's the people who got him where he is today. And one other piece of advice, guys, if you're listening to me from high above Trump Tower, if you're anywhere in that ivory tower, listen very carefully, because Jimmy Durante said it best. Be awfully nice to all those you meet on the way up, because you're going to meet them all on the way down. This is Michael Savage. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
I think when the president-elect, who's also the head of your party now, Joe, tells you before he's even inaugurated he doesn't wish to pursue these charges, it sends a very strong message, tone and content, to the members. And I think Hillary Clinton still has to face the fact that a majority of Americans don't find her to be honest or trustworthy, but if Donald Trump can help her heal, then perhaps that's a good thing. I think he's thinking of many different things as he prepares to become the president of the United States, and things that sound like the campaign aren't among them.
Oh, thanks, Kelly. Things that sound like the campaign are not among them. And so she's on MSNBC now with this guy, Joe. That's great. That's a real 180 right there, isn't it? Now she's friendly with MSNBC. That's terrific. And you know, Joe, things that sound like the campaign, forget about it. They're not among them. We don't believe in any of that crap. That's for the schmucks out there. You know, the deplorables. You know, the people you hate. They're just schmendricks to us. I mean, look where we are. We have everything now. We use the forgotten man. We don't need him. They're garbage. Can we be friends, Joe? Can I come on the show a lot? Will Pill Griffin give me a job? Is that why Pill was in the Trump Tower the other day to give her a job? This is sickening. Just sickening. All right. So, okay, Hillary's not being investigated. Well, he said he would. But she said he wouldn't do anything he said he would do now. So we should get, let's see, forget the wall. Forget the military. No, I don't know what else they're going to do. I don't think it's going to be one thing or the other. I told you before, I understand the Machiavellian nature of politics and deals have to be made. And I don't think she's the most important part of the structure. She lost, she's gone, she's out of the picture. But it's a very bad signal to all of the people who work in defense and intelligence, believe me, and the FBI. The common soldier, even, is going to be demoralized by this. So there's an issue here. But I don't think it's the only topic. I think there are other topics. I don't know what we're getting from her. What are we getting from the Democrats for that? We the people. We the deplorables who gave Donald Trump the power of the world. He is now pardoning the woman we hated, the reason he was elected. What is it that we're going to get as a result? What is she giving us? What is the Democrat Party giving us? Nothing. Typical. It's a one-way deal again. So they're getting everything and we're getting nothing. We're getting the short end of the stick. And to make matters worse, his spokesmouth, Kellyanne Conway, goes to MSNBC, of all places, and says, well, things that sound like the campaign are not among the things that matter to us anymore. What, you didn't hear that? I am supposed to sit here and lick her shoes because of what? I want access to the president? No, I don't care one way or the other. If he wants to see me, he knows how to call me. If he wants to invite me somewhere, they know how to invite me. I'm relieved that I'm still an outsider, to be frank with you. I would dread being somebody who wants a job right now in the government. Do you know what a burden that is for somebody in the media to have misrepresented themselves for all these months and then want a job from the Trump administration to go softly on everything that they do in order to hope that they don't burn bridges with them? It's a terrible place to be in, and I thank God I'm not there, okay? I can live with myself. If I don't sleep at night, it's not over this. It's over other things. It's about aging. It's about destiny. It's about relatives who are in another world. It's not about this. It's not about this at all. This is a rather unimportant situation in my life, to be honest with you. I get up every day now, and, you know, I thank God every day that I have this show. I thank every day I thank God I have this audience, that my mind is sharper than it's ever been in my life, and I can sit and focus. It's amazing to use a mind that's sharp. You know, when I was younger, my mind was not as clear as it is now, not as focused as it is now. I can just sit down, and the thoughts come right out of me when I'm sitting and writing, which I've not stopped doing. I told you I'm doing a God book, right? Remember that? That's for next year, God willing. Working on it. But I'm working on a surprise book, which I can't tell you about. I can't help it. Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back. You know, I'm going to tell you the story in January. I can't do it now. I had to negotiate something. In order to get the God book published by a major publisher, not on Kindle by myself at 12 cents. I mean, I could have published the God book for $12, or 12 cents, rather. I want wide distribution, so I want to go with the great publisher who did my last couple of books. Well, in order to do it, they want another book of a different nature from me coming in March, which I'm not going to tell you about, but I'm working on that as well. And only a few other projects. I pulled one the other night that was going to be published on Friday or Monday. Did you hear about it? I can't believe I did. I started to read from it. The futuristic science fiction novel about a future where mean-faced, clipped-haired women ran the world and castrated all the men. Oh, I forgot that. But I decided not to publish that yet. It was going to come out as a Kindle book, and I was going to read it on the air this week. But there's only so much I can put out at one time. That'll be a nice little treat for January about the futuristic nightmare that I have. And it's not called a dystopia novel. It's called an anti-utopia novel about a terrible future that we were almost about to all be dragged into. I wrote it in 1981. Yeah, and I want you to see this futuristic nightmare. Who knows, one day it may be an important book. It'll be out in January as a Kindle edition. Be back in a minute. Be here or be nowhere. I'm Michael Savage. On the cusp of the Thanksgiving holiday, which is one of my favorites. I mean, I'm sure everyone loves it. If you don't have a family, it's probably a terrible time to be in America. Off. No, I can't imagine what it's like not to have a family on a holiday like this. Real depression. I mean, the wards, the shrinks must be busy as heck on that Wednesday. But so we're talking about this the email scandal, that he's not going to pursue it. You know, think about it a little longer. He's not even the president yet. He has to get all of his appointees through Congress. We're going to have a new attorney general. The attorney general himself can go after her in 3 months. Did you understand that as well? That's number one. Secondly, if Trump came out and said he's going to go after his political opponent, what would he sound like? Like a petty third world dictator. You know? We don't want that in him. He's a bigger man than that. So, is that the biggest issue of business now is her? How about the southern border? How about building the wall? That's the main thing. And then there's another element to this, by the way, that I don't even want to bring up because it's pure speculation. What if he learned that she is seriously ill, as we feared or thought, and that she's going to be, going downhill pretty soon? What if he heard that? What, he's going to tell you that? So there's a lot of things that we can't rush the judgment on. However, on the other hand, I keep gotta go back. What message does it send? 855-407-282. Where's WikiLeaks now? They were so hot during the where'd they go? Where'd Julian Assange go? Did he exist? Is Julian Assange a fabrication of the Russian government? Is he a cyborg? Does he actually exist? Where is this guy? The last I checked, he was like he looked like Mussolini in the Uruguayan embassy, Ecuadorian embassy in London. And where is he now? He was so big, he brought her down with all the leaks and the FBI and this one. Every day we were hanging on and now he's gone from our life. Where is there life after Julian Assange? I don't know. Life is not the same. There's no excitement anymore. I was looking forward to the next wiki leaking. There's nothing to leak about anymore. And by the way, all the Democrats have said the Russians were tampering, the Russians did this, the Russians were meddling. Where's all that gone up to? What do you mean the Russians are meddling? I don't hear that now. I mean, they're bellyaching that she got more of the popular vote, of course. Anyone knows if you take out the millions of people that Obama threw into this country by busting our borders and not inspecting their citizenship, he actually didn't lose by the popular vote. You want to count the taxpayers? He won by a landslide. Let's break it up by those who pay taxes and those who don't, okay? Did anyone do that analysis yet? I hear how many Hispanics, how many blacks, how many whites, how many browns, how many educated women, how many uneducated women, how many absolute morons, how many idiots voted for who, how many sub-morons, how many sub-clinical idiots voted for which one, how the untouchables voted, how the deplorables voted, how this split piece voted for that one and the split piece voted, how many polar bears voted. But what if you broke it down by how many taxpayers voted for him and how many taxpayers voted for her? I think you might see a little different picture than the picture you're seeing now from the rabid dogs in the streets. Lord, yeah. Get a lot of commentary now in a good place. On the bottom of my website, michaelsavage.com, the good people at WND put in a comment section where you get people who go on there now, join the discussion, and people are talking about all the topics I'm talking about today. And what else? Please never stop giving your audience the alternative broadcast that you do. Right. Well, I've been trying to. I don't know. I did some good ones. I try to get off politics for a day or so. I did Plato's Republic yesterday. I thought that was a nice change of pace. I think it went over the heads. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear Aristotelian logic. Most people are Plato. They don't even eat Greek food anymore. So what are they going to do? They break dishes? No, they don't throw dishes and break them. I read this to you from Plato's Republic yesterday. If you missed it, it was a fabulous piece. Are we going to rerun it on Thanksgiving? No, the next day maybe? Friday. I just gave away I'm not going to be here for Thursday. It's terrible. I'm not supposed to tell you, but I won't be here. But my voice will be here Thursday and Friday. All the great stuff that you heard or missed. I know you like your heart drop, many of you. Like the thought of not being on the other side. So you think I'm with you, and I'm not there. You feel like heartbroken. It's like a doctor. Like I'm going away with a tooth thing that I had put in last week that I broke like a crown. Fell out 3 days. Awful. 3 days of hell. Put in Wednesday, fell out Wednesday night. Put in Thursday, fell out Thursday during the show. Friday, I said, give me the super glue, man. Stop it already with the fruitarian glue. Stop giving me hippie glue. Give me the stuff they use, you know what I'm saying, for permanent. She said, well, we only use this on permanent. I said, put it in. So I said, now how are you going to get it out when the permanent bridge thing comes back, whatever, it's the crown? He said, well, that's another problem. We have to cut this off. Oh, God. I said, I don't care. I was eating a fresh meal, I swear to God. Did I tell you what happened to me on Friday? I took a day off. Did you hear this story? Nah, you're not interested. I went to a restaurant, a little restaurant for lunch, alone. I like to be alone in a restaurant. Would you believe that? I don't like conversation at dinner. Either I like to watch television when I eat or be alone. Why? Because in both cases, my mind is active. If I'm eating alone, I can sit with my iPad. I can watch look at the news. If I'm in a restaurant or if I'm at home, I can watch a TV show and eat. What could be better? People are not as fast as a television show. Think about the production elements. What person can keep up with a TV show that costs millions of dollars to make? You ever see the credits at the end of a TV show? Hundreds of names. Lighting, directing, gaffing artist, food supply, shoe shine artist, dialogue coach. How can any one person keep up with that or compete with it? It's impossible. So as I say, I like to sit alone in a restaurant. So to make a long story short, I took the day off. I went to the city. I go to a little French restaurant for lunch. And I'd order whatever. Or I knew that the tooth had gone in again that morning. That was the third time. A crown. And I ordered the thing I like. There's a leek salad that they make. Cooked leeks with like tomato. Everything is soft. And a half a bottle of very expensive Bordeaux that I brought down from the apartment that I started the night before. I paid my corkage. Because I figured the corkage on the one, I don't want to go into it, but the wine was better with the corkage than it would have gotten there, because I know my own wine. It was a Chateau Montrose Saint-Estèphe 2003. Mise en bouteille au château. I even have the cork. I love it so much. So anyway, I'm sitting there. The leeks come out. I'm drinking the wine. I'm chewing on the leeks. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking at the other people eating. I'm alone. Back to the wall. No one bothering. Quiet restaurant. Very unfashionable. No one's there. Like, there's no fancy people in there. Just people eating who like food. Anyway, I'm chewing. And I said, wait a minute. There's no bones in leeks. This can't be a bone. There are no bones in leeks. I said, oh, no, not again. There it was. My heart started to, like, oh, my God. I said, just put it in a box. Actually, I didn't. I refused to leave. I was not going to have another lunch ruined by a tooth. So I said, okay, please, just speed it up. So I drank more wine. I finished the meal. It took forever to get it over with. I raced back from San Francisco just before traffic. Again, heart pounding, racing between the lanes and this and people. I never saw such dysfunctional driving in my life. Why do people who are slow go in the left lane to block you? Can you explain that to me? I like a spiteful thing. I understand you want to drive slow. Stay in the right lane. It's the slow lane. What are you blocking? Well, your business that I want to go fast? Yes. Usually it's idiots and broken cars that have a Bernie sticker somewhere, or it's a Prius. It's inevitable. A Prius or a broken car? Every time, it's someone in the left lane. It's their job to go 54 and block you because you're ruining the environment by going 56. I finally get to the dentist, and there it was. I said, look. He said, I use glue number 2. 1 is the weakest. 4 is the strongest that we use on, like, animals, I think. I don't know what. So I said, give me the animal glue, whatever it is. Then I asked him a joke. It's funny. I said, I was joking on the radio show yesterday about Washington's time, George Washington, when they had, like, they used wooden teeth because there were no ceramics. I mean, George Washington had wooden teeth, right? I said, how did they glue those in? And he said, you know, I don't even know. That's an interesting question. I said, was there glue? They had glue in those days. It was like a horse glue, wasn't it? Robert, do a quick research on what glue was used in George Washington's time. Must have been so toxic. Forget about it. Then he said, no, I think that they were just for show, the wooden teeth. George Washington had wooden choppers in for official pour. You know who has nice teeth? Trump, I got to tell you, has beautiful teeth. Talk about teeth. I never looked at Obama's teeth, like probably sharp, like rodent-like, I would think. I have his ears. Oh, I can't wait till he's... Whew, I hope he writes books. How did he buy those 3 houses? I brought it up yesterday. Where did Obama get the money to buy 3 houses in the most expensive parts of America, Hawaii? He got one in California, Rancho, whatever. one in Washington, most expensive, and one in Hawaii. Where did they get the money while they're still in office? Can anyone explain it? Oh, Wolf Blitzer didn't look into that? Oh, the Joe guy that Kellyanne Conway is a big friend of, he didn't look into that, the great journalist? Can anyone answer that? Where did he get the money from? See what's in a see what you get to with a tooth? See what I'm saying to you? If you start a story and you could talk about a crown in a dental office and then go this far with it, that's what I mean by the enjoyment of radio. It's a natural phenomenon for me. I love it because it's like being with people personally. But that's why people don't like me in real person. Because although I have a wonderful ability to be a raconteur with an audience on the radio, in actual personal time with people, it's not the same thing. Because people don't want to listen to you today. Why is it? This is an interesting question. It's a social phenomenon. Why is it that a man can hold an audience of millions of people captivated day in and day out, weeks and years on end, but in real life they don't want to listen to you? Why is that? Especially family. How dare you say that? Why are you trying to pose yourself? Why must everything be about you? Who do you think you are? Like, no one wants to hear a thing you have to say in real life. But in the audience loves you. Go figure that one out. So I don't do very well with people. That's why I like dogs. My silent partner. My silent partner, Teddy. Where is he? This dog knows everything about this show. Where is he right now? He's not here. He's in the other room. But when he is the last piece of music for the last segment of the last hour, bingo, they stretch, they get up, they give you the eye, they want to go out. It's so beautiful. Isn't it amazing? Hillary and Trump is one of the questions that we've covered today. Should waterboarding of Islamofascists still be used? Is it time to close zoos? Do you support infrastructure spending of up to $1 trillion that Trump is liable to propose? I do, because I told you that it will produce $2 trillion in actual revenue, as opposed to Obama's American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, a scam from 2009, $831 billion, went up in, wow, where'd that money go? $1 trillion? $831? That's almost $1 trillion. Not a single bridge or tunnel that I know of was built under that money. Where'd the money go? Where did it go? Green scam artists, solar panels made in China. That's why Trump is president. And I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Nostalgic. We live in a cynical world. No one cares about love. It's all over. It's dead. Cynical world. Horrible. So I did a little research, and we learned that George Washington did not have wooden teeth, that he suffered from poor dental health throughout his adulthood. Toothaches, decay, tooth loss. You don't want to hear any of this. It bothered him. Bad diet, genetics, poorly bad, no vitamins, no brushing. He was in constant pain. The guy was a fanatic. He used tooth cleaners, dental medicines, dentures. You don't want to hear about this. Many of you don't want to hear that, like, Thomas Jefferson had hemorrhoids or something like that. But to me, it pays to bring a person down to the level of reality so that we understand that at the end of the day, we're all the same. And contrary to legend, none of Washington's false teeth were made of wood. His dentist in the Revolutionary War, Dr. John Baker, made false teeth for him out of ivory that was wired to his remaining real teeth. And then, to make matters even more interesting, in the 1780s, George Washington employed the services of a French dentist living in America. Oh, Jean-Pierre Lamayeur. Would you let a French dentist touch him? But it is unclear precisely what dental services Lamayeur performed. Let's let that go, please. But they think he made the teeth. But do you know that there's a... on the bottom of this article in the New York Academy of Medicine, there's a partial pair of dentures from Washington's head that are in Mount Vernon. It's kind of grisly. It almost feels like a weird, it's like crazy. That's actually the founder of America's dentures? I don't know that I ever wanted to see this much about him. Ivory and metal contraptions were difficult to use while eating or speaking, and they tended to stain easily. You see, you say about Washington, everyone's like, oh, George, the founding fathers. They were just like you and I. They had problems like we do.
teeth stained easily, or a lot of maintenance. You got to use a pine and a cedar stick, soaked it in broth. But you know, oh, they're better than us. They were different than us. All right, you can understand that underneath there was a human being. An extraordinary human being was underneath it. Let's not glorify people, whoever they may be, including ourselves. So now we're on the cusp, I like that word a lot, of Thanksgiving. And many of us are already moving around. We're on the road there, halfway there. We're going to Aunt Millie's house. With all of the traps and tribulations of family awaiting us. Here's the problem. We all want to be getting along. We all want to go and enjoy it. Why can't it ever... Why is it not a movie? Why is our life not like that? Why must there always be something going on? Well, all right, that's why alcohol was invented. Let's put it to you that way. But on the other hand, if too much of that, you can wind up punching. You know, you don't know. I remember I lived in Hawaii for years. Every Saturday night, a certain ethnic group killed each other. There were murders every Saturday night. So look, what are you going to do? Enjoy your pumpkin pie, that's all. And brush your teeth, boys and girls. This is the Savage Nation saying goodnight.